Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
Today's program is brought to you by Corin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. For more information, visit corin.com.
Hello, welcome to Japan Eats. I'm your host, Akio Katayama, food writer and the director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deep understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from Brooklyn, New York. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deli in the supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi ramen izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, and I try to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. My guest today is Daisuke Nakazawa, who is the owner and executive chef of the Michelin-starred Sushi Nakazawa. He opened Sushi Nakazawa in New York in 2013, and his success led to the opening of the second location in Washington, D.C. in 2017. He is also planning to open the third location in L.A. later this year. And he's also the owner of Saito, an izakaya and sake bar in Manhattan's Narita, which he opened in 2022. You may have seen Chef Nakazawa in the legendary documentary film Jiro Dreams of Sushi on Netflix. And after completing the classic, extremely strict training under Chef Ono, he moved to the U.S. and started a new chapter of his life. So today we'll discuss what Chef Nakazawa learned from his 11-year training at the renowned Sukiyabashi Jiro, and why he moved to the U.S., how he conveyed the traditional sushi culture to a very diverse global audience in America, why he had never changed his menu price since Sushi Nakazawa's opening 10 years ago, and much, much more. But before you start, Japan is available on the Heritage Radio Network website, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. So please go to iTunes, Stitcher, or Spotify, whichever you listen to, and subscribe to Japan Eats. And please write a review. We truly appreciate your feedback. Now, let's start a conversation with Chef Daisuke Nakazawa. Hello, Chef Dai. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you, Akiko-san?
So I've been very much looking forward to this. You're amazing. You're very successful. And you had a dramatic transformation of your life. So we'll discuss all about it today. So first of all, to get to know you, where are you from? And what did you eat when you grew up?
So I come from Tokyo. I grew up mother home cooking, which includes the basic staples like a tonkatsu or a steamed vegetable. My mother also likes to go out to eat, and she had a passion to find a great restaurant that weren't expensive. She passed along to me, and I look at similar restaurant I dine.
Mm. Right. So you had a colorful cultural food background in Tokyo. So, and you started your career as a sushi chef at the age of 19 in Tokyo. So when and why did you decide to become a sushi chef?
So in 1998, when I was a high school student, one of my best friends started to apprentice at a local sushi restaurant. And we made promise each other to open a sushi restaurant together one day. Unfortunately, we couldn't fulfill that promise. I'm a sushi chef still, but he decided to become an electrician.
Oh, okay. So it was a diverse dichotomy. Okay. So, but you worked at the Sukiyabashi Jiro under the legendary sushi chef Jiro Ono for 11 years, which is not just a sushi chef. So how did you get to work for sushi and the sushi chef Jiro Ono?
I started working at apprentice at Jiro-san in 2001. They were still very famous sushi restaurant in Tokyo, but no like a world famous as now. Like I had their popular book. I find a job listing in the newspaper, and I called the restaurant like very nervous, and my hand shaking and sweat palm. Like this is a situation for that find a job.
Right. So even in the film you were featured, you made the kind of this famous, famously important dish that comes at the end of sushi course, which is egg tamagoyaki. And you had to practice like 200 times of trial and error.
As a movie, yes, I did, yes.
Right. So, and you passed the test, so congratulations. Right. And then what did you learn from your experience at the Sukiyabashi Jiro and Chef Jiro?
I learned a lot of experience working there, of course, the technique, but more importantly, how to describe hard work, organize, and be patient. Almost everything I learned from them.
Right. I could guess from the movie. It must be very, very strict. So, yeah. So, okay, so we'll take a quick break here now. And when we come back, we'll dive into Chef Nakazawa's new life in the U.S. after he left Sukiyabashi Jiro in 2012. So please stay with us.
Today's program is brought to you by Corin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. Corin is proud of their Japanese culture and traditions, but they want you to know that their products are not just for Japanese restaurants. The knives and tableware bring out the best qualities of food from every culture and fit into every restaurant, from French to Pan Asian to American, and that is why they are located in New York City, where people from every country in the world come to eat. Corin's Tribeca showroom is home to the most extensive collection of Japanese chef knives in the world, including Japan. Stop by to view their exquisitely designed tableware and the rarest natural sharpening stones. They have a whole range of knife services, from repair and rust removal to reshaping and realigning. Corin is dedicated to this ideal, bringing the highest quality Japanese design to your table so you can experience the unparalleled quality of Japanese craftsmanship in your home or restaurant. For more information, visit corin.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Eats on HRN, Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Aki Katayama, and my guest today is Daisuke Nakazawa, who is the owner and executive chef of the Michelin-starred Sushi Nakazawa. You may have seen Chef Nakazawa in the 2012 documentary film, Jiro Dreams of Sushi, on Netflix. After the classic, extremely strict training under Chef Ono, he moved to the U.S. and started a new chapter of his life. So let's dive into your new life. So you could have stayed in Japan and successfully had your own sushi restaurant in Tokyo or somewhere else, but you decided to move to Seattle in 2012. So why? Why did you do that?
So at the end of the 2010, Master Jiro told me, okay, it's time to think your own way. But at the time, I did not feel truly ready. I had dreamed to own the restaurant in Tokyo, but it was not specifically planned. So I started to deeply thinking of my life and my family future. So I tried many things after that, and I decided to make life plan. I read the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen R. Covey, which gave me the direction and the inspiration. I started make a dream note on September 11th, 2010. It was not easy, but it's time to figure out. So my dream slowly become clear, and I find my dream outside of Japan. Then March 11, 2011, earthquake hit Japan, and my dream need to start moving faster. Then I arrived in Seattle on April 15th, tax day, 2012.
Right. So, but, you know, question is, why Seattle?
I used a chef agent to move to the outside of Japan. And the first offer come from Seattle called the Shiro's. Shiro-san and Jiro-san was co-worker at, I don't know how long ago, 60 years ago. And they still have a relationship, and I feel this is a destiny.
Right, and Seattle, which is a great place to live and also close to, I think, good port to get the good ingredients, I think. So, yeah, so when you started working in the U.S. in Seattle with Shiro-san, Kashiba, Shiro Kashiba, how did you find the difference between the U.S. and Japan about sushi or anything else?
Yeah, it's a lot. Like, I started working at the Shiro's on April 20th, 2012. It's a first day I couldn't make California roll.
Oh.
Yeah. Also, I couldn't read the order come from the printer, like abalone, grey duck, red snapper, yellowtail. For me, it's like everything question mark. So also, I never worked in the a la carte sushi restaurant. I only had a omakase restaurant experience. So I was shocked to see my skill did not help this kind of operation. It was a new world for me, but I worked hard and finally caught up operation after 4 months. I still couldn't speak English, only 4 months. I started to use like eye contact or funny action or performance to connect with my guests. Yeah, Master Shiro was best person to learn from. Yeah, I learned many things from him, how to act at sushi counter in the United States.
Oh, wow. That's completely different business model. So I'm sure you learned a lot. It was intense first 4 months.
Yeah, I can make a California roll now, yes.
I have to find out where you serve it. And I want to try your California roll. So, and then you opened Sushi Nakazawa in New York in 2013. And received multiple accolades, including a Michelin star and a New York Times, very rare, 4 stars. And your success continues to this day. So what happened? Why did you open a sushi restaurant in New York after moving to Seattle?
So it was a part of my plan, dream plan. The plan said I need one step before moving to New York. Like New York is like my one of the goals of the my dream note. Then my partner Alessandro sent me the offer on the Facebook Messenger in July 2012. It was just 3 months after I moved to the US. But I didn't speak English. I used Google Translate to communicate. This is the beginning story of Sushi Nakazawa, yes.
Oh, wow. So he just out of blue contacted through Facebook's Messenger? To you?
Yes.
Wow. Oh, that's interesting. And, well, I'm so glad it worked out. Okay. So, and he, and Alessandro, so he stays as a business partner to yes. this day, right? So, sounds like you found really a good partner.
Yes.
Right. So, so what is the concept of Sushi Nakazawa? And what would you like to communicate to your guests in America as a classically trained sushi chef?
So, nigiri sushi and the Western style service are the concept of Sushi Nakazawa. So, me and the partner use a hybrid nigiri sushi and Western style service and matched New York City dining sense at that time. So, I like to cater to experience to my guests. I am everything included. Where I stand, how I position myself at the counter, I care how many extra drops of citrus or garnish each piece of sushi. I care about how to serve, like the voice tone, or timing, eye contact, or if they're righty or lefty. the service from the front of house, they take care of the detail too. We try to do like best for the, our service detail, and small things makes experience special.
I visited Sushinagoza a long time ago, and I was very impressed. I mean, it's just the, you know, the way you explain how you serve reminds me of a tea ceremony, because it's all about how you make your guest happy and satisfied at the end of the meal with close attention. But at the same time, I thought it was like a theater experience, because it's not quiet tea ceremony style service. It's more like a coordinated show. It's not like, you know, big show, but something very energetic, quietly energetic. And it was a very festive feeling I enjoyed. So I think you combined classic Japanese hospitality, omotenashi, and also American style. Kind of,
yeah, Shiro-san's style.
Yes, it's amazing. So, yeah, so you still continue that style in New York and DC, and to be in LA as well?
Yes, but like a little bit more serious.
Okay.
Not like a funny as before. Yeah.
Okay. So, I think also we're going to discuss later, but I think the Japanese omakase style sushi culture has really thrived in the last, I would say, 5-10 years in New York and other places. So it makes sense that you transform a little bit to be more serious, because I think it's just so important to have that cultural development of sushi. And I see that clearly. Okay. And then you serve the traditional style of sushi called Edomae, but you would rather call your sushi New York Mae. That I remember I spoke to you a while ago. So, and then, now you probably have, you know, DC Mae and LA Mae is coming up. So could you elaborate on the term New York Mae versus Edo Mae?
Okay. Edo Mae sushi brings potential of each fish. All the fish come from the excellent fish market. So edamae sushi uses the potential of a fish and subtracts away unnecessary preparation of the fish. So in here, fish from the in the U.S. takes more than 36 hours to deliver it to the my cutting board. So already I cannot subtract to some of the preparation. That's why I add a small detail for presentation. That's why I add a small detail to the preparation for the each thing. The addition adjust for the taste tab of the New Yorkers. So also we use a local based fish and the ingredients, not just Japanese one. So that is what I call the New York Mae.
Right. So I think the essence of Japanese cuisine, especially sushi, is really using the local ingredients to the fullest and maximize its flavor and the seasonality. So you you apply that concept based on what's available here and the condition of the fish, and then you add some flavors. So what kind of flavors do you add if you compare your classic style of sushi that you used to make in Tokyo versus...
So, for example, like yuzu kosho, basically edamae chef don't use for yuzu kosho, right? But like I started using for 10 years ago because people like it. Also, yuzu kosho kick the... yuzu kosho spice kick the people.
Okay. So, well, basically, yuzu kosho is a kind of a paste, which is salty and peppery. And it's kind of, it's very kind of flavor, use flavor, but also balanced saltiness, and it's really punchy. So that's kind of the accent to elevate the flavor experience. I think it's really good for American palate, right?
Yes.
Okay. So, and there's so many extremely pricey sushi restaurants in New York these days, and you can easily pay like $450 per person. I'm real concerned about the sushi being so expensive because it's not so democratic. I want everybody to enjoy Japanese sushi like people can do in Japan. But at the same time, you have not changed the price of the menu since the opening of Sushi Nakazawa.
We changed the price last year, this year. Last year, 20%, yes.
Okay, but that reflects...
$180 desu, hai.
But under $200 of all this, what's happening quickly in the past 5 years, I would say, it's astonishing. So what's your idea of not raising price like other sushi restaurants?
So I have four reasons. The first reason is because Sushi Nakazawa is around five times bigger than those pricier restaurants. So the second reason is that since the restaurant is larger, I cannot make sushi alone. So I have to have a team. The third reason is that restaurant always open. Currently, Sushi Nakazawa is open 7 days a week, lunch and dinner. I cannot work 7 days. So I cannot be there every day. So when the price higher, customer expect to serve from the chef, the face of the restaurant. And the last reason is so I want to bring out the value. I believe that value is the most important reason to come back and keep experience the restaurant again. The customer always look for the value for the experience. That is why I give them experience and more variable than amount. This is my philosophy too.
Right. I hope that other restaurants, there are going to be more restaurants like Sushi Nakazawa because in Japan, the quality of sushi is very high and standard. But in New York, it's almost like there's nothing in between except for certain, you know, few numbers of restaurants. It's very expensive, or you just go to, you know, deli or supermarket sushi, or you just go to very casual place, and it's not like dining out on Friday or something, you know, for fun, like going to American restaurants. So sushi, I hope to be more available, like as a part of fun dining out life in New York. So yeah, I hope you're going to maintain the style forever to inspire other sushi restaurants. Right. Okay. And then how do you describe the change in your customer demographics, preferences, palette, and the American sushi culture overall since the opening of Sushi Nakazawa 10 years ago?
So compared with 10 years ago, so American people are eating more raw fish. So I feel omakase market has grown, and since sushi became more common, Americans are open to try more different type of fish. So people start to recognize more detail in the flavors and preparation on the fish.
Right. So do you think people are more knowledgeable about what kind of sushi, type of sushi beyond tuna and salmon?
They try like new things, especially like a shellfish. Before, shellfish is, they eat only a couple kinds of shellfish, but now they try to more. It's a change for 10 years.
Right. And probably distribution of seafood may be better than 10 years ago, I guess. Right?
Yes, exactly.
Right. That's great. So how has your 10-year experience in America changed you?
So I have absolute American culture over the last 10 years. So since opening Sushi Nakazawa So a lot of important things have changed. For example, I was in Japan, my goal was find the ultimate good taste. But after change the important things, my goal into the creating a total experience. So that includes for many factors like flavors, customer service, time, value, and more. So I feel that happiness of my employee is also important. With all these things in my, I make a total experience with my team.
Interesting. That's very interesting. It's almost the fundamental difference between traditional Japanese sushi establishment and culture within the sushi restaurants. And it's a great contrast. I think both are great, but I'm so glad that you're doing it really flexibly, adjusted yourself to what's demanded in America, and you're successfully, obviously, thriving by offering the value and the quality of great sushi. So, yeah, congratulations. So, sushi is delicious, and consuming fish is proven to be very healthy, according to plenty of research. So, but on the other hand, we are globally facing the challenges of sustainability. So, how do you try to offer sustainable seafood at your restaurants?
So, I try to make my sushi, of course, delicious and sustainable by the supplementing white Japanese fish with local seafood and the farm-raised seafood. So it is a real challenge, and I cannot make everything sustainable right now, but we will continue to try more sustainable options in the future.
So, for example, what kind of local fish do you think is good for serving, making quality sushi?
Local salmon, gray duck, abalone, and albacore tuna, Spanish mackerel. It's a lot, yeah.
Oh, that's great. Right. So, do you think you're discovering more local fish to serve instead of shipping from highest quality?
Sometimes like local fish need more quality, consistency.
Right. Do you think the quality is improving in terms of local fish?
Yes, some of that, yes.
Right. Okay, so hopefully the percentage of local fish is going to increase because it's good for many reasons. So yeah, glad to hear you really working so hard on it. So, and you opened Saito in Manhattan's Norita last year, which is not a sushi restaurant. So what is the concept of Saito, and why did you open a non-sushi restaurant?
I opened the Saito because I want to help my employees to have a dream. So Saito's partner, one of the chefs at the Sushi Nakazawa. The concept is izakaya with high quality fish and the produce. So I open restaurant. I would want to eat in as well. Yeah. So the reason Saito is a non-sushi restaurant because it's a new challenge for me. I want to know what would happen if I don't have a sushi or from the menu. And this is something I am strongly associated with. So worst case, if this concept doesn't work, so I can always shift to sushi restaurant anytime.
But I'm just looking at the menu, and this is something I want everybody in America knows. Sushi is not everything, right? Not many Japanese people eat sushi every day. And what people eat every day is like seafood salad and light otsumami and edamame and those light snacks with sake and the grilled fish, like, I don't know, the kushi, wagyu kushi. And this is so many interesting delicious food items that you can really enjoy in the same way as you enjoy sushi. That's really featuring the taste of the ingredients. So, yeah, and Iceland noodles also. yeah, so what's most popular at Saito?
So right now is tuna, bluefin tuna leaf.
Nakauchi is kind of the hidden treasure because it's the kind of like flaky pieces of flesh of tuna. And if you are a regular at sushi place, you look for that and ask for the sushi chef, like, can I have the nakauchi? Because that's by the bones, it's like a full of umami, and that's a hidden connoisseur's piece. So, yeah, that's great. And the price is right, and you can just probably enjoy those small dishes with sake. I would say around like $50-$60 per person.
Yeah, right? A little bit more, but almost. Yes.
Okay. It depends on how much sake you drink. And right. Yeah, but it's really a bargain considering how much it costs to dine out in New York right now. So, yeah, I'm so glad. And hopefully you can open Saito in more locations. So, okay. And by the way, so when are you going to open the Sushi Nakazawa in Los Angeles?
End of this year, around this year.
Right. Yeah. Wow. So you'll be busy.
It's always a push-back construction.
Right. Okay. And how do you predict the future of sushi and Japanese food outside of Japan? Because you observed a lot of different scenes. People enjoy Japanese food outside of Tokyo, right? So what's your prediction?
So I feel the market will expand and become more and more vast. So 7-Eleven has been selling sushi for a long time.
Mm.
And supermarket, you go sell sushi. Yeah. So going forward, I feel that sushi will not only spread around America and enter your world. So this start with Americans making sushi rolls. Which is what made sushi popular in the United States. I believe sushi will continue to fuse each culture and separate all over again. All over the world, sorry.
Right. Yeah, I think if you have good rice and fish, that's sushi, but then you can play with how you flavor the rice, and it just comes into the artistic part of it. So, yeah, I agree. And it's healthy. And you are a great ambassador, obviously. So I'm glad you are here. You decided to move out and try the adventure and starting with Seattle. So that's great. And so now you are the president of the New York Japanese Restaurant Association. So tell us about the organization and your mission.
So New York JRA is a mission. New York JRA's mission is help for the Japanese restaurant in New York and support them the issue that would impact their business or so Japanese food market, educate general public on Japanese food culture. And my mission with the New York JRA is give the Japanese restaurant community future and dream and convenience. Mm-hmm. So I want to make a base so that it is easy to open the startup restaurant or some chef want to move into United States, like some kind of things like the association can help for the people.
Mm, right. Yeah, there are many Japanese restaurants, but I think we need a focus, right, to kind of what the tradition is and what the tradition can kind of push the envelope in this country. So I'm looking at the members, so you, the president, and like, for example, vice president, that's Takashi Sato. He joined me because he's a Soy Sauce Sanjay producer. And yeah, it's exciting that those great people joined forces and then try to kind of define the traditional Japanese restaurant concept, but also it's going to be really a great foundation to, I think, to expand. Like, tradition has to evolve, and especially in America, like your sushi restaurant style concept changed. There's so many things this country can make Japanese tradition even more fun and interesting. Okay, so what are your plans and dreams beyond LA location opening?
So in the next 5 years, I want to retire from running my business when I'm 50 years old. So after I retire from that day-to-day operation, so I want to start organization to make an ocean the cleaner. Also, I want to start a local fish distribution with sashimi quality fish.
Wow.
Yeah, even if I retire, I know I will still want to. So,
yeah, I don't know.
Retire, but
I don't think you could be probably busier. I can see it. So people don't let you retire. That's the term. Yeah. But
yes, but like a day-by-day operation, yes, I want to retire.
Okay, right. And then you take over something new. So yeah, I'm so curious. Yeah, please do keep me posted. And I definitely want to support what you're doing. And you can come back here and talk about your whatever you're doing. So great. So where can we find your updates online and on social media?
So on Instagram. So my handle is at Daisuke Nakazawa. And that's it. Yes. And stay tuned on more update on the future of Sushi Nakazawa. Yes.
Okay, great. And the website of your Sushi Nakazawa, the sushinakazawa.com, and Instagram, Sushi Nakazawa. And also Saito, it's www.nycsaito.com, and Instagram, Saito NYC. So that's great. So again, please do keep me posted, and congratulations on your tremendous achievement in America. So, thank you so much. So, listeners, if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for show topics or guests, please contact us at japanese@heritageradionetwork.org or at kikotaema.com. Japanese is a weekly program and is always available at heritageradionetwork.org as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. Our engineer is Armin Spenjon, and thanks for listening. I will see you next week. Japan Eats is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.